We're coming up into the holidays. I can't even believe it. Thanksgiving, Christmas, this all is coming down the pipe again. But a lot of times people are scared to be around their families and their loved ones during the holidays for the fear of, I'm addicted to drugs. My parents, my loved ones, they always call me out every time I'm sitting at Thanksgiving dinner. I don't understand why, even though I nod out and my face lands into mashed potatoes. But when we get sober, we can be in those positions. And now our outlook on Thanksgiving and Christmas and the holidays, everything changes. We're now seeing life through sober eyes, and it's a beautiful thing.
You're listening to Real Recovery Talk with your host, Tom Conrad. Every day, Tom helps guide people like you who have loved ones dealing with addiction. You're most likely frustrated with the situation, worried your loved one won't get better, and concerned you're not doing enough to help. This show will help you understand the tremendous struggle of addiction from your loved one's perspective. You'll hear stories of recovery, which will give you hope. And you'll understand the limits to what you can and can't do to help those you love. Tom is a certified addictions counselor who's successfully winning his own battle with drug addiction and alcoholism and has helped many others win theirs as well. It's time now for Real Recovery Talk.
Here we are, Real Recovery Talk. I am your host, Tom Conrad. In today's episode, we have Benjamin B.
Hello.
Don't do that so loud next time.
My bad. I was trying to change it up. Last time we had a discussion, our intros are always the same. And you should record them. And yeah, mix up.
Anyways, back for another episode of Real Recovery Talk. Thank you for tuning in. First and foremost, go to realrecoverytalk.com. There you will find every single episode that Ben and I have ever released. You can also reach out to us, Ben at realrecoverytalk.com and Tom at realrecoverytalk.com. All right, here we go. So in today's discussion, what Ben and I wanted to bring attention to is we get a lot of phone calls from potential clients that want to come into Rock Recovery Center, or they just want to get sober in general. Not every person that we speak to is a candidate for Rock Recovery Center for whatever reason. And one of the things that we hear oftentimes from people is they are oftentimes hopeless. They really don't feel like they have a shot at sobriety, and they really don't know what, even if they were to get sober, what are some of the things that they can look forward to? Because if you think about it, we've spent so many years drinking and drugging, and we've gotten accustomed to this lifestyle of addiction and alcoholism. And to even fathom the idea of having a life that is worth living is oftentimes it's hard for people to comprehend. Like, it's hard for me to go to somebody and say, hey, man, if you get sober, this is what your life could look like in 5 years or 5 months from now. And a lot of times people don't even want to hear that. So our hopes for this episode is that if that is you, if you think that that can't be you, that you aren't in a position or you can't even wrap your head around the idea of sobriety and even fruits of sobriety and what life could look like being sober, play this episode over and over and over again, because it is true. These things can happen for you. It takes work and it takes effort on your behalf, but in the end, it is so worth it. And so those are some of the things that we wanted to discuss and really just portray that hope is really the premise behind this episode. You can do it, and we're going to explain to you some of the things that you have to look forward to. Now, it is no secret that Ben and I are 12 steppers. We've both worked the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, and the fruits of our sobriety is purely, from my perspective, is a result of working the 12 steps and now having a spiritual foundation in my life. And that is really what my sobriety hinges on today. And all the other things that come from that, all the fruits of my sobriety, are a result of working steps and having a connection with a higher power for me. Ben, I noticed you were going to say something.
I just want to clarify something really quick. You know, Tom mentioned Alcoholics Anonymous, 12 steps. And I just want to throw this out there for anybody who might not be familiar, might be new to this process. My drug of choice is heroin and crack, yet I've chosen Alcoholics Anonymous. And at the end of the day, I really don't feel that it matters what your substance is. You know, each program has its traditions. There's Narcotics Anonymous, Cocaine Anonymous, et cetera, et cetera. But I just kind of wanted to throw it out there. You know, obviously I qualify myself as an alcoholic as well, but, you know, I just want to put it out there that, you know, at the end of the day, what we're looking for is a design for living. And that's what the 12 steps do for you. It's not about quitting alcohol and drugs. It's about learning how to live your life without them, basically.
Yeah, and I think also this isn't an episode to – this isn't promoting the 12 steps. This isn't anything of the sorts. That is just the way that we chose to get sober. There's multiple ways in which people get sober, and, you know, hey, to each his own. It's whatever works for you, and the 12 steps may not work for you, but it worked for us, and it works for millions of people every year. And I think that is all, you know, the proof is in the pudding, per se, that 12 steps is very sought after when people want to get sober. So, but whatever way you choose, sobriety is sobriety, and fruits of sobriety are really what we want to revolve this episode around, is how our lives are going to change when we get sober. And so one of the first things that I want to reference is basically, so in the big book, big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, on page 83, there's a section in there that's called the promises. And
nine step promises.
I need to brush up on my big book intellect, I guess. It's the ninth step promises. And one of the first things that it says in these ninth step promises, and what that means is basically when you go through the first eight steps and you get onto your ninth step and start working your ninth step, you have the promises which are going to come forth. And one of those is we're going to find a new freedom and a new happiness. So what is that mean for us when we get sober? A new freedom for me is I'm no longer dependent on drugs and alcohol in my life. And I have a new happiness, which is everything else outside of drugs and alcohol for me. Ben, what's your take?
So where I take this, that the freedom aspect is when I am dope sick, when I'm going through alcohol withdrawals, the DTs, what I want is some relief, right? You know, I just want to feel better. All I can think about is the fact that I'm dope sick and I'm going through withdrawals and I feel like hell. Well, that's great. You know, that's what we go to detox for. We get some relief, but then something more has to happen. You know, what I have to have in order to stay sober is I got to work towards freedom. You know, relief, getting that pain off in the beginning, that's all I'm searching for. But the tough part is staying sober long term. And that's where it needs to go from seeking relief to seeking freedom. You know, and I see that a lot, man. People will check themselves into detox. They're like, I feel better. Yeah, you feel better physically, but do you feel better from the holistic point of view? You know, are mentally, do you feel better? Spiritually, do you feel better? Are you able to go out there and conquer all the quote unquote triggers that are out there, you know? And if you're a guy like me, man, the only trigger I have is I woke up today. I'm conscious. If you're the real deal drug addict and alcoholic, you know what I'm talking about. Anything could be a trigger. But I like to throw that out there, man. Freedom as well. Like the one that instantly comes to mind for me is when I tried the methadone program, and I did that for about a year and a half. Methadone is the drug that brought me to my knees, not heroin. You know, ironically, the one that was supposed to be the drug to get me off of heroin is actually the drug that I was the most physically addicted to ever. We got other podcast episodes on that. But yeah, I'm with Tom, man. There came a point where I was handcuffed to my substance. I couldn't leave North Minneapolis. I was stuck.
And I think that's why Ben and I, our perspectives on medically assisted treatment, I mean, I think you all know what our perspective is on it. We're not really for it. Well, we're not for it really at all. I mean, except in extenuating circumstances, we're more against it than anything. And that is why, because it's been our experience, not only with ourselves, but with working with thousands of people at this point, that there is no true freedom when we are tied to another substance, whether it be methadone, Suboxone, Subutex, benzos. You know, people are going on low dosages of Xanax or Ativan or Klonopin to be able to deal with anxiety and stuff like that. You know, it's just not, there's no real freedom there. There's no true healing there because ultimately we're still dependent on a substance.
Let me just throw it out there. I didn't mean to take it in this direction, but so I'll be brief about it. Again, we have other episodes on this, but you know, if the goal is to stay alive, methadone and Suboxone kept me alive, you know, until the point where I was ready for abstinence recovery, you know, and really it comes down to the fact is, you know, what is your goal? And there's got to be some strong circumstances behind that. I'm the real deal junkie. You know, if you knew me out on the streets, man, methadone and Suboxone was probably a vital part of my journey. But at the end of the day, I don't think that anybody can argue that an abstinence-based outcome is the best outcome, you know?
Absolutely. I would agree with that 100%. All right. So moving on, one of the next things that it talks about is we will comprehend the word serenity and we will know peace. And I'm not going to go through the whole promises word for word. And again, I want to reiterate that these things can happen for you regardless of if you work the 12 steps or not. I think if somebody is truly sober, then these things happen organically. And it just so happens that this is in the big book, right? But these are, when we remove drugs and alcohol, these things happen organically, whether we work the 12 steps or not. Now, what do they mean when comprehend the word serenity and we will know peace? From my perspective, the word serenity for me is I'm okay with myself. I'm okay being with myself. I'm not this anxious, like, ball of just going crazy in my head person. I'm serene. I can be at home and relaxing on the couch, not wondering, where am I going to get my next drink from? Where am I going to get my next drug from? You know, what is that? What chaos am I going to cause myself today? Because when I lived in my active addiction and my alcoholism, my life was constant chaos. There was no real serenity for me. And I know what peace is like. Peace more for me on a mental aspect. I'm okay in my head today. When I was drinking and drugging, I wasn't okay in my head. That is what ultimately led me to use every single time for me was more of a mental just craziness in my head rather than a serene, peaceful mind.
There can be a lot to this. The thing that initially comes to mind for me is, you know, what spiritual principles am I taking action and practicing on a daily basis? And what jumps to my mind immediately is the conflict resolution that I was taught through using the fourth and fifth step. And these are like real life applicable skills and tools. You know, and I can't help but think about the serenity prayer. And the tools help me get to where the serenity prayer is useful. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. There's also the other version I want to touch on really quick. God, grant me the serenity to accept the people I cannot change, the courage to change the one I can, and the wisdom to know that one is me. Basically speaking, you know, I'm able to find serenity and peace through understanding that there are situations in my life which I cannot control, which I am quote-unquote powerless over, that I just kind of have to accept. But that doesn't mean that being powerless doesn't mean that I'm completely unable to take action. You know, if I take the tools that I've been taught in treatment and 12 steps and smart recovery, whatever the case may be, and I'm able to apply that, I'm able to put my head down on my pillow at night because I don't make the situation worse with my lack of tools, you know, in my old perspectives and the way that I used to handle situations. You know, it talks about in the big book, now I'm drawing a blank. We handle situations which used to baffle us, right? You know, basically speaking, you know, I've learned how to address circumstances different. Rather than reacting, I respond. You know, I go at stuff with a plan, with a clear head. And That's what takes me to serenity and peace. I can put my head down on my pillow at night knowing that I didn't screw things up worse than situations that are already out of my control.
I think that's one of the things that people, when they're in the very beginning stages of sobriety or even before they even get sober, that's one of the hardest things for people to really wrap their mind around is, is my mind actually capable of not running rampant? You know, and that's a real, and for myself, that was something that was really hard for me to understand, was that I eventually was going to get to a point where my mind was calm, you know, and I was not just going batshit crazy every single day thinking, where am I going to get my next drink? Where am I going to get my next drug from? And I think that's a very good place to be. And that's something to look forward to. And it doesn't have to take years. It can take a week for people, you know, it could, for some people, it may only take 48 hours, you know, really depending on how far down the scale we have gone, you know, where are we in our addiction, I think is going to really reflect on when are we going to get to these positions in our sobriety.
What I like about the podcast is not just being able to talk about the principles of this, but I like being able to tell people like, hey, this is something I practiced today. Just really quickly, I had a situation where I was trying to help a gentleman, you know, get himself into a detox and into treatment. And everything that could have gone wrong over the last 3-4 days to help this guy went wrong. And today it finally came to a head where the individual stormed out of his hometown airport and just refused and gave up completely when he was literally at the gates of the airport, ready, had his ticket and everything. And, you know, the outcome, you know, I'm heartbroken and I put a ton of work into helping this guy, endless hours over the last 3 or 4 days, including the holiday, you know, and, at the end of the day, like this, that peace and serenity, you know, after talking with Tom, who's truly a sober support of mine, and a couple other people that I know that were aware of the situation and trying to help me problem solve it, you know, after talking to them, these are people in recovery. Like, I know in my heart, I did everything that I could, and I got to find peace and serenity in that. Things didn't work out. They weren't meant to work out for some reason, no matter how hard I tried, you know, and, there was things that happened with the airline that went wrong. There was things that happened with the receiving facility that went wrong. That, you know, the list went on. It was absolutely crazy. But these things were outside. Every single part that went wrong was outside of my control. And the gentleman was even able to say, hey, Ben, I know none of this is your fault. You know, and I got to be okay with that. We're not in the results business. We're in the business of showing up. That's where I get my peace and serenity, knowing that I showed up today.
All right. The next one is fear of uselessness and self-pity will disappear. Again, this is in the promises, the 9-step promises of the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. And if you have a big book in front of you, open it up to page 83. It's towards the bottom of that page and you can read along with us. We're like a little bedtime story, Ben.
A lot of people say that, actually. They write, hey, we listen to you going to sleep every night. I'm like, good, we put you to sleep.
Yeah, that's
that's
awesome.
Good news.
So anyways, fear of uselessness and self-pity will disappear. What does that mean? Well, again, from my perspective, I had no use. My use was, when I was drinking and drugging, was, hey, I just wanted to go out and do my deal. Leave me alone. Let me drink. Let me use my drugs and everything's going to be fine. I'm not hurting anybody around me. I'm just kind of here in human flesh, but I'm not really amounting to anything. And ultimately what that led to was this idea of self-pity for myself. I did not feel like I was going to amount to anything. I was 26 years old, still living at home with my dad, and just having that urge of, I'm just not going to amount to anything. I'm not going to be able to complete college. I'm not going to be able to have a job that I actually enjoy or a career. I'm never going to have a family. None of these things are going to even be humanly possible for me to achieve. And you know what? I kind of bought into that. And what that did was that fueled my addiction even more. Because the more I was in self-pity, the more it was just pour me another drink. You know, I'll just drink through it. And those things when we get sober, those things start to disappear because we start to understand we're useful. We're very useful, not only for ourselves and the people around us, but all of our sober supports. And, you know, everybody kind of feeds off of one another. And I no longer have that self-pity like, oh, if this wouldn't have happened to me, then this is, I wouldn't have had this outcome or that outcome. Everything that happens to me today is a result of either me just being stupid. I mean, because I still am. Even though I'm sober, doesn't mean I'm not a dumbass. You know, is a result of something that I have done, or it's, I have to believe, is something that my higher power wants for me, whether I like it or not. That self-pity for me is not, it's not part of the equation for me anymore, and that comes with sobriety.
Uselessness and self-pity will slip away. So the word that jumps out to me there more so is the uselessness. I just touched on this at a meeting the other night. It was the topic. But basically speaking, you know, a lot of individuals come into recovery and the word higher power gets thrown around a lot. What that translated to me, for me in the beginning, was a higher purpose. Like, how long did we walk around without any sort of purpose? And the beautiful thing about being in recovery, being a drug addict, being an alcoholic, people often say, I'm a grateful recovering alcoholic. I'm like, what the hell are you talking about? You're grateful you're an alcoholic? But when you've had sobriety and you've gotten a taste of that, that translates to the fact that you've found a purpose. Like, we get a free purpose card. Thank God we crossed a line. That's what I was grateful for. The topic was gratitude at this meeting. I'm grateful that I crossed a line into the fact that I was brought to my knees. I was hopelessly defeated by alcohol and drugs. Alcohol was my master. Heroin was my master. Like, I crossed a line into the point of where I got to get help, you know, and it's a free purpose card. All I got to do in the beginning is turn around and help the next alcoholic, help the next drug addict. And for the first time in my life, I feel some use. It was, you know, and I always joke about it. It's one of my favorite quotes from my sponsor. I'm going to quote him. So pardon my French. But I had a really good sponsor, and I was worried, you know, when it was my time to sponsor somebody, that I wasn't going to do as good of a job as he did with me. And he said to me, Ben, don't worry. You can't fuck them up any worse than they already are. Right. But, the thing is like, when I got a guy sitting across from me who thinks I know what I'm talking about, when I'm thinking to myself, I have no idea what I'm talking about, it doesn't even matter. Regardless, I'm sitting there helping somebody. And that felt good for the first time ever. For the first time ever, I didn't feel useless. Somebody else found some use out of me for the positive. And I think that's huge, you know. Translate, if you struggle with that higher power God thing, look for a higher purpose. What's your purpose today?
And I think it's easy for people to get, they could be listening to us right now thinking, well, it's easy for you guys to say, I mean, we're coming up on 10 years sober, both of us. Easy for you to say, Ben, you got almost 10 years sober. Well, here's the thing. You can have 10 hours sober and you're still in a position to, you have something to offer somebody that doesn't have any time sober. You know, it's all in perspective. You know, what are we going to do to try and make the situation better?
Let me give proof of that. If you go to any of our clients, I'd venture to say 90% of the time, if you ask them who the most helpful person in recovery to them is, they're not going to say their therapist. They're not going to say Ben or Tom. What they're going to say is my roommate. I mean, because that's somebody that they are intimately close with. They're sleeping next to in the
not in the same bed.
Not in the same bed. Just to clarify. Yeah. In the recovery residence, the same apartment. They're, you know, staying with each other. Like, it's funny. And those are folks, two people early in recovery going through the same things, going through the same feelings. They identify with each other. So Tom's absolutely right. Like, time is not a qualifier for usefulness. Yeah, there we go. For usefulness, you know, doesn't matter how much time you have, you can always be useful to somebody else.
All right, the next one is self-seeking will slip away. And basically, I mean, this is kind of in the same realm as what we were just talking about. We're no longer in that position of let's take. It's more, what can we give? What can we add to the situation? What can we add to other people's lives? And that's something like Ben and I, we do this podcast, and we don't do this because it's something that is in our job descriptions or anything like that. We do this because it's a way for us to give back to you, to give you education, to give you information and knowledge and, you know, everything encompassing addiction. And it's something that we feel good that we're able to do this, and we get the emails and we get the responses from people like, you don't understand how this episode affected me, or we get the comments from YouTube, which I'm always still surprised that, like, we still, because we're not very active on YouTube, if at all, really. I mean, it's something that Ben and I kind of, we need to be more active on, but we're not. I mean, the podcast is our thing, but we still get comments that people land on our YouTube videos and are like, hey, you don't understand how that affected me in a good way. And, you know, you said that, and that's the first time I ever heard it from that perspective. And it really makes things make sense. And that for us feels so good. Again, we're not in this take, take, take mode. We're more in just giving. And I don't know, for me, that feels super awesome to be able to just help people. And not only through the podcast and through YouTube, but even here at the center, like, we're transforming people's lives, but we're able to do that because somebody did that for us, right?
Spoiler alert coming up. Spoiler alert. If you have not read the big book yet and you don't want to be spoiled on this part, it tells us in part of the big book, you know, the root of our problem is selfishness and self-centeredness. The root of our problem is not alcohol and drugs. The root of our problem is selfishness and self-centeredness. And I just like touching on this aspect where, you know, I throw it out there. It's not easy to not be selfish. You know, and I share on this quite often where, you know, for instance, I have sponsees or the phone rings really late and it's somebody looking for treatment and you're like, oh man, I really don't want to answer. And it sucks. You know, I'm like, oh, dude, I don't want to answer for this sponsee that's calling. This is the third time he called today. What does he want now? But we have this obligation to pick up the phone, or if it's in person at a meeting, whatever, we see somebody struggling, walk up and help them, and just move your feet, and you have to take some action. Like, while it's very much times inconvenient, and honestly, like, takes away time from my family and stuff like that, at the end of the day, like, I end up getting paid back tenfold. And that's a beautiful thing. It's really easy for me to say, oh, I got too many sponsees right now. I can't take on another one. But am I being honest with myself? Like, could I help somebody else? And I feel like as a person who's recovered, I have the obligation to do so. You know, now obviously you got to have some boundaries and not overstretch myself either, you know, and that's a tough one to learn. But more often than not, we're able to handle things. It's not always easy.
All right. And this last one, I think, can be the most important one of all of them, really. It's our attitude and outlook on life will change as a whole. I think it's something that this is a very kind of macro statement. Our outlook on life will change. What was our outlook, or what is your outlook while you're drinking and drugging? Or even if you're the parent of somebody that is drinking or drugging, what's your outlook on their life right now? It is probably very dismal. There, it doesn't seem as if there's much that is salvageable. But that isn't truth. That's not something that is, that's not what we're selling here. I mean, it's really our outlook on life and our attitude on life is going to change. And again, when does that happen? It's different for everybody, but it won't change unless we get sober. That's the only guarantee, is if we don't take that step to actually try and get sober. And I use that word try very loosely because we all can do it. It's just a matter of who is going to do it. It will change. You know, our attitudes and outlooks on life will change. You know, these situations which used to baffle us, not anymore. I mean, we're in a position now where we got a clear mind about ourselves. We are able to be in situations that we may not have been able to be in before without drinking and drugging. For instance, we're coming up into the holidays. I can't even believe it. Thanksgiving, Christmas, this all is coming down the pipe again. It seems like we just ended last Thanksgiving and Christmas. But a lot of times people are scared to be around their families and their loved ones during the holidays for the fear of, I'm addicted to drugs. My parents, my loved ones, they always call me out every time I'm sitting at Thanksgiving dinner. I don't understand why, even though I nod out and my face lands into mashed potatoes. But when we get sober, we can be in those positions. And now our outlook on Thanksgiving and Christmas and the holidays, everything changes. We're now seeing life through sober eyes, and it's a beautiful thing.
So as Tom was talking on that, like, I 100% agree with everything that he said. And, you know, our outlook, our perspective does change. I want to throw something out there to anyone who may be listening to this, like, as a loved one. I could tell you right now, Tom was just talking about, oh, it must be easy. You guys have 10 years, you know. Yeah, coming up on 10 years sobriety, being sober, not picking up a drink or a drug is easy today. But I kind of want to throw it out there to loved ones, people who have not ever been in active addiction or active alcoholism. I will still tell you to this day, getting sober is the hardest thing I ever did in my life. You know, and where I'm, what made me think of that is the fact that, like, everything that I've gone through in the past, like, we're utilizing our past to look forward and say, man, it could never be as bad as that again. And really, like, spiritually inside, that feeling of impending calamity, you know, I don't know that I could ever feel that bad again. Something super tragic would have to happen in my life for me to feel that way. Or, you know, even if the most tragic thing happened in my life, like, I don't think at any point today picking up a drink or a drug would sound like a solution or like a good idea. You know, no matter what it would be, when back in active addiction, you know, I've or early recovery in general, like, let's say I have a couple weeks sober, the smallest thing would be a perfect justification and reason to pick up again. But today, I feel like the most tragic thing that could ever happen in my life would still not justify a good reason for picking up a drink or a drug. You know, it's kind of crazy to say that, but it's my truth today. And I just wanted the loved ones out there to know, like, dude, this is the hardest thing I ever did in my life. I don't know if Tom feels the same way. Today it's easy. In the beginning, it was not. So if you're pissed off and angry at your loved one who is in addiction, active addiction, you can't figure out, or maybe they've gone to treatment several times and they just keep not getting it. You know, at the end of the day, please hear it from some experienced people. I reclaim the hardest thing I ever did in my life, which gives me this perspective that everything else is easy today.
So those that list that we just went through are more of the mental and the emotional promises of sobriety. There's some in there that we didn't cover. Fear of financial insecurity will leave us. You know, there is, so go through it yourself and research it and, you know, read it. Again, it's in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous, page 83. It's at the bottom. You can read those 9-step promises for yourself. And if your mind, as you're reading those, if your mind's telling you, well, this is unsurmountable. This is like climbing Mount Everest for me. It's just not something that I can ever foresee myself doing. Don't buy that crap is essentially what it is. You can, but you have to take some initiative for yourself. And that's the thing, is nobody's going to do this for us. And when we can get into that mindset of, look, I can keep going drinking and drugging, or I can actually take some initiative for my own life because nobody's going to do it for me. When I can finally do that and take some initiative for myself in the limited amount of time that I have on this planet Earth, things will start to change. But if we sit back and have this attitude of, well, you know, it's like Eeyore, poor me, you know, I'm always held down by the man. You know, if it wasn't for the government doing this or doing that, or my parents doing this or doing that, I wouldn't be the way that I am. We got to rid that. We can't do that crap anymore, because what that ultimately is doing is preventing us from getting to a position of thriving. You know, I mean, and unfortunately, a lot of people, they don't get to that point and they succumb to addiction.
The definition of insanity in recovery terms is the inability to see the truth about ourselves. You know, personal accountability is a huge part of recovery. In fact, like, we're taught time and time again in the recovery process, whether it be 12-step, smart recovery, whatever the case may be, it's all about our side of the street. What am I responsible for? Listen to the Serenity Prayer. It says exactly that. That's what it translates into, is personal accountability.
All right. Do you have anything else, Ben, or is that it?
I think that's it, dude.
All right. That is it for this episode of Real Recovery Talk. Thank you for tuning in. Again, go to realrecoverytalk.com and listen to every single episode that we've ever come out with, and also leave us some sort of rating and review. And that is it. We will see y'all later.
You've been listening to Real Recovery Talk with Tom Conrad. If you'd like to have a confidential conversation about your specific situation, give Tom a call on his direct line at 561-220-7163. Or if you'd prefer, you can chat with Tom live at realrecoverytalk.com. As always, if this show is a benefit to you, please give it a 5-star rating and review in Apple Podcasts, Google Play Music, or wherever you discover your favorite podcasts. Thank you for being part of our mission to bring hope and healing to our loved ones struggling with addiction, as well as wisdom and comfort to those of us around them.